when I was a kid, I learned how much I like contrast. Contrast, black, white, you know, there's that contrast. I wasn't as enrolled in the tones of gray, black, and white worked for me. When I was growing up, the rival high school had better colors than my school. My school had green and gold, which were okay, but the rival school had red and black. Those are cool, like high contrast colors. Now the bad news is Beth went to the rival high school. But I've always liked that sense of contrast, and it's surely more than simply colors. Contrast in terms of situations, right? I love taking my kids to get their hair cut because that little transformation that happens, that contrast between, gosh, you really need a haircut, and, oh, look, you look like you're back to human. Right, and so there's this little transformation that happens. I grew up in the 80s, so I love the transformation that happened in 80s cartoons. Right, I remember watching He-Man. Right, and I don't know what would happen beforehand, but He-Man would put his sword up and he'd say, "What, Lewis?
Power of grace."
That's right, he'd say that, and then he'd like have all sorts of magic powers or however that would work. And then, of course, in the 80s, right, the Transformers cartoons, and that's where the sound comes. Right, I love that sound. All the Transformers. I have this. I got this as a kid. This is my I can't remember the name of this Transformer. Someone else may know it, but he's one of the few Autobots that's actually a plane. He transforms into a plane, and he does this other cool thing too. So I love that. Of course, when the Transformers movies came out, I was in heaven, and they had those same sounds as the Transformer sounds, some of the same character voices, and it was awesome. It was really cool. We all go through some level of transformation, I suspect, in our lives. If nothing else, here where you are today and perhaps the thing that you do most often, whether that's a job or a hobby or something else, whatever it is that we do now is probably dramatically different than the thing we did when we were 6 months old. We've all experience some level of transformation, right? I think about, I got a notification earlier today that my high school class is getting together this summer. And one of the things that I've often sort of grinned to myself about is, like, I know what kind of kid I was in high school. And I wonder a little bit how many of those folks that I may get together with this summer go, "Really? You're a pastor?" We'll see. My dad has this wonderful observation of the transformation that only happens just those years of high school, right? Ninth through 12th grade is a huge if you just think of developmentally and psychosocially, this giant transformation between ninth grade and 12th grade, between 13 and 14-year-olds and 17 and 18-year-olds, it's this huge developmental path that happens. And my dad described it this way, and I love this. He says, okay, so high school, remember, freshman, sophomore, junior, senior, okay? In case you didn't know that or forgot about that, like, that's how that goes. All right, so freshmen don't know. And they don't know that they don't know. Sophomores don't know, but they know that they don't know. Juniors know, but they don't know that they know. And seniors know, and they know that they know. But it sort of plays, doesn't it? Like, if you know anybody who's anywhere around that age, right, that sort of fits. And there might be other life stages where we can use some of those same things to describe it. And it's all about this sense of transformation. Now, in this context today, I'm really focusing more on transformation in a more positive sense. And I acknowledge that sometimes transformation happens and it's not a positive thing. I understand that transformation happens, and sometimes it's one of those really hard kinds of transformations. I want to acknowledge that that's the case. Like, that's so, and I get it. I understand it. It's not where I'm going to focus today. I don't want to just leave that unsaid. There are transformations that are really hard for us. There are transformations that are very positive, even though they're hard transformations. And all those are true. But I want to talk mostly today about the transformations that happen for us that in general are positive and life-giving kinds of transformations. And I want to start reading a scripture out of 2 Kings that really has a little bit of elements of both, right? Overall, it's a good transformation, but it's a transformation that is challenging for those who were involved. This is a story that comes out of the book of 2 Kings, and it's in the second chapter. I want you to know this story is sort of the conclusion of a relationship that happens all the way back in 1 Kings. So it's a relationship that is transformed in a particular way, but it's a relationship that's had some length to it. As I said, this is 2 Kings, beginning in chapter 2. When the Lord was about to take Elijah up to heaven in a whirlwind, Elijah and Elisha were traveling from Gilgal. Now, I want to be really clear for a second here. Elijah and Elisha are very similar sounding names. Please know that they are two different people. Good, that's the first thing that we should understand. Someone pointed out to me today, I never thought about it like this, but it's true. If you want to know which one came first, they're in alphabetical order. Elijah came before Elisha. Good. Both are prophets in the ancient Jewish tradition. Elijah is one, and we'll read a little bit more about Elijah later, but Elijah is one who's really sort of elevated. If there's like a totem pole for ancient Jewish prophets, like Elijah is really high up there. Like Elijah and Moses are like the top two that many good and faithful Jews, remembering their history, will consider near the top of that sort of ranking. So, and then Elisha is the prophet who followed Elijah. So that's how that goes. All right. So Elijah and Elisha are together, and they're traveling from Gilgal. And Elijah said to Elisha, "Stay here, for the Lord has told me to go to Bethel." But Elisha replied, "As surely as the Lord lives and you yourself live, I will never leave you." So they went down together to Bethel. Now, I want to explore this just briefly for a second. Have you ever seen that someone is experiencing some sort of transformation, those kinds that are harder, those kinds that are more challenging, those kinds that aren't all filled with fluffy teddy bears and butterflies, those kinds of transformations that can make us hurt or ache? And sometimes people going through those kinds of transformations will say things like, "Just leave me alone. I just want to be left alone." And have you ever been that person who says, "I'm not leaving you"? This is how this lands for me. As Elijah knows that he is nearing the end of his time on earth, I wonder if it might have been a hard time for him. Even though he continued to do the things that he was supposed to do. And how did Elisha respond? "I'm not going to leave you. I'm going to stay with you." This happened several times. Let's read it. The group of prophets from Bethel came to Elisha and asked him, "Did you know that the Lord is going to take your master away from you today?" Like, it seems like everybody knows what's going to happen. "Of course I know it," Elijah answered. "But be quiet about it." I love that. You ever heard bad news and say, "I don't want to hear that anymore"? Somebody says, "All right, you want the good news or the bad news?" "I'll take two of the good news, a mocha frappuccino, and I'll just skip the bad news." Right? Sometimes we don't want to hear the bad news. It's interesting. Elisha knows it's there. Like, he acknowledges it. And then he sets it aside. "That's not where I want to focus." It's not a bad way to handle that. He does it again in a minute. So he says, "I don't want to talk about it." Then Elijah said to Elisha, "Stay here, for the Lord has told me to go to Jericho." But Elisha replied again, "As surely as the Lord lives and you yourself live, I will never leave you." So they went on together to Jericho. It happens again. Then the group of prophets from Jericho came to Elisha and asked him, "Did you know that the Lord is coming to take your master away from you today?" "Of course I know," Elisha answered. "But be quiet about it." Then Elijah said to Elisha, "Stay here, for the Lord has told me to go to the Jordan River." But again, Elisha replied, "As surely as the Lord lives and you yourself live, I will never leave you." So they went on together. 50 men from the group of prophets also went and watched from a distance as Elijah and Elisha stopped beside the Jordan River. Then Elijah folded his cloak together and struck the water with it. the river divided, and the two of them went across on dry ground. Now, the word that's described here as cloak is described differently in other translations. Other translations will sometimes use the word mantle. And it's the same ancient Hebrew word that's used all the way back in 1 Kings when Elijah and Elisha first meet. You see, Elisha is out plowing some land with a team of oxen. In fact, there's 12 teams of oxen, and he's with the last one. And Elijah has been told, you got to go find this Elisha guy because he's going to be your successor. And so Elijah goes and finds Elisha, and there's, you know, plowing with the oxen. And the first thing that Elijah does is he takes his mantle, which is very often in ancient tradition a sign of being a prophet. He takes his mantle and he places it on Elisha's shoulders as a symbol that Elisha too will become a prophet. And you see the parallel here. You see the connection here between this first meeting and the time that they're about to part company. This perhaps same mantle is folded and is used to struck the Jordan River, which then parts to allow them to cross the river on dry land. When they came to the other side, Elijah said to Elisha, "Tell me what I can do for you before I am taken away." And Elisha replied, "Please let me inherit a double share of your spirit and become your successor." Now, it's already been foretold that Elisha is going to be the successor. And yet, I wonder if Elisha is looking for some deeper symbolism for those who were there, some deeper symbolism, some deeper understanding. And some scholars will say that this asking for a double blessing is a reflection on another common tradition of the time. You see, an oldest son, when the father passes away, will receive a double share of the inheritance, twice what anybody else earns. It's something about being the oldest, specifically the oldest male. And so I wonder if this is that kind of connection, that kind of understanding, this inheritance of God's gifts. And so he asks for a double share of that blessing. Well, Elijah responds. He says, "You've asked for a difficult thing. If you see me when I'm taken from you, then you'll get your request. But if not, then you won't." As they were walking along and talking, suddenly a chariot of fire appeared. You guys hear the music? Da 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 da. Some of you got that joke. Well done. A chariot of fire appeared, drawn by horses of fire. It drove between the two men, separating them, and Elijah was carried by a whirlwind into heaven. Elisha saw it and cried out, my father, I see the chariots and charioteers of Israel." And as they disappeared from sight, Elisha tore his clothes in distress. That's another ancient Jewish practice, to tear your clothes in grief at the separation. And I wonder what sort of transformation Elisha had been through to that point. To be called by Elijah when he's out there plowing fields with a team of oxen. And later to go with this man, to see him as teacher, as mentor. Perhaps as a parental figure, to come to greater understand his own calling, to understand how God has equipped him and called him and has transformed him. And I wonder how many of us have had an experience of transformation in our faith life. For some, it may be you never grew up in a church, you never went to a church, and one day felt like that's what you needed to do. For some, you may have grown up going to church and then in some way felt pushed away from the church, pushed out of the church, and now find yourself back. For some, you grew up in the church and it's sort of always been there for you and you've always been a part of it, and yet I submit that there may still be ongoing transformation for all of us. And that's the thing about transformation. With very little exception, it's not a one-time thing. And it's also important to think about, like, what do we do with it? When we recognize that there's transformation happening, what do we do with it? And I'd like to turn your attention to the Gospel of Mark. And this is the 9th chapter. And this is the scripture that details more specifically what we're talking about today, the transfiguration of Jesus. This is Mark chapter 9, beginning with verse 2. Bless you. 6 days later, Jesus took Peter, James, and John and led them up on a high mountain to be alone. Now Peter, James, and John, it's sort of the inner circle, right? It just seems as we read our scriptures, there are some disciples who Jesus has a tendency, these are the ones, if there's something very particular, I only want to talk to a few people about it, I only want to show a few people. Jesus seems to take Peter, James, and John into a little bit of a deeper confidence. So as the men watched, Jesus' appearance was transformed, and his clothes became dazzling white, far whiter than any earthly bleach could ever make them. Then Elijah and Moses appeared and began talking with Jesus. Now it's interesting here that Elijah and Moses, and I mentioned that they're among those who were considered the highest among the Jewish prophets. Now, Elijah is often known as the chief among the prophets. Moses known as the bringer of the law. And so we might see this meeting with Jesus as bringing together the law and the prophets. And many scholars read it this way. Some scholars read that, as you go through ancient scripture, Elijah didn't die, he was carried up into heaven. Moses never died. So this is this perhaps meeting in this way. Perhaps that's their significance. Whatever happens, from this point forward, Jesus begins to turn his face toward Jerusalem. That's a church phrase we often use, turning his face toward Jerusalem. From this point on, in this Gospel of Mark and the others, all three synoptic Gospels tell this story, Jesus is focused on Jerusalem, focused on what will become Palm Sunday and Holy Week and Good Friday. And Easter Sunday. And it's a reminder for us that the scripture of transfiguration always comes to us when we follow the lectionary, always comes to us the Sunday before Ash Wednesday, the Sunday before Lent begins. An opportunity for us to recognize our opportunity for transformation as we get into the season of Lent. Well, let's talk about how Peter responds, because I love Peter. Peter exclaimed, "Rabbi, it's wonderful for us to be here. Let's make three shelters as memorials, one for you, one for Moses, and one for Elijah." He said this because he didn't really know what else to say, for they were all terrified. I've talked about how Peter's mouth is disconnected from his brain. And he has this tendency to say things before he thinks it through. But I wonder if we haven't done the same thing. Here's this wonderful and amazing experience. I want to hang on to it. I want to make it mine. I want to own it. I want to keep it. I want to protect it. And I wonder how much of that making it mine is not sharing it with others. Peter wants to house it, to protect it. And he's terrified. We can understand. And maybe any of us who have had some amazing, life-transforming experience have entered into that sense of transformation terrified. And yet, we might consider, even as we talked about blessings a few weeks ago, should we hang on to them and keep them for ourselves? Or should we share what's been generously given? Well, as if that wasn't scary enough, the story continues. Then a cloud overshadowed them, and a voice from the cloud said, "This is my dearly beloved son. Listen to him." Suddenly, when they looked around, Moses and Elijah were gone, and they saw only Jesus with him. As they went back down the mountain, he told them not to tell anyone what they had seen until the Son of Man had risen from the dead. If you have had a life-changing experience, a life-transforming experience, it might be natural to want to hang on to that. And yet I submit that if we try to hang on to that particular moment, we might miss the idea that transformation doesn't have to be an instantaneous thing. Transformation doesn't necessarily happen in one instant and particular moment. But I submit transformation is something that is constant for all of us throughout our lives. I think often of that quote from the great theologian Steven Tyler of Aerosmith, who says life's a journey, not a destination. Our faith life is about the journey. It's not about one particular moment of transformation. All right, I can check that off my list and I'm done. It's not about that. Because I believe in a God who continues to transform us. I believe in a God who continues to challenge us. I believe in a God who continues to call us. I believe in a God who continues to work in and through us, not only so that we might be transformed, but that we might participate in the transformation of our communities and our world. Transformation doesn't happen right now. It happens ongoing. So how can we open our hearts and our minds so that we might not only be transformed in an ongoing way, but so that we might participate in the transformation of our communities and our world? How might we continue to make disciples for Jesus Christ for the transformation of the world? We're United Methodists. That's the United Methodist mission statement. It begins with recognizing our own transformation. And this opportunity, as we enter into Lent, is a chance that we might recognize the transformation that's ongoing in each of us. It begins with Ash Wednesday. It continues into Holy Week. It symbolizes using 40 days, not including Sundays, using 40 days. It symbolizes the 40 days that Jesus spent in the desert. It symbolizes the 40 years that the Israelites spent wandering the desert. And sometimes when we dig down deep enough, we find our own sense of wilderness. And we also find that we're transformed through it, in it, because of it. And hopefully it's a transformation that's that positive kind of transformation, that fluffy teddy bear and butterfly kind of transformation. A kind of transformation that makes us a better person. And that kind of transformation that helps us to join in God's work transforming the world. This is my prayer for each of us as we enter into a time of prayer. Holy and gracious God, give us wisdom and strength and guidance so that we might not only be inwardly transformed, but that we might join in the outward transformation as we seek to join in your kingdom come on earth, just as it is in heaven. God, we lift these prayers to you, including those that have been left unsaid, as we say together the prayer taught to us by your Son, saying, Our Father, who art in heaven, hallowed be thy name. Thy kingdom come, thy will be done, on earth as it is in heaven. Give us this day our daily bread, and forgive us our trespasses, as we forgive those who trespass against us. And lead us not into temptation, but deliver us from evil. For thine is the kingdom, and the power, and the glory forever.